Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Welcome back to Circles of Change here on August 6th. It's always a pleasure. I know some parts of the country, your students are not going back to school, but ours sure are here in Tucson. Particularly for me, our son is proceeding into his senior year in high school, so that whole process of college discernment is upon us, not just selecting the schools, but, of course, determining in this tough economy the financing of such in particular. So it's a real pleasure for me to welcome on the line Ruth Vedvick and Carol Stack from Haywick Day. Welcome on the line, ladies.
Thank you so much, Zara. This is Carol.
Great. Carol and Ruth.
And this is Ruth. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Both of them from Minnesota. Well, let me introduce. They're the authors of a new book called The Financial Aid Handbook, Getting the Education You Want for the Price You Can Afford. That's the operative word. Ruth is a native of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and is the former director of admissions for the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana, Ball State, and Agnes State College, Scott College. Along with her co-author, Carol, she's a principal at Harwick Day, an enrollment firm that works with private colleges, including those such as St. Mary's College, Mills, Hofstra University, Illinois College, and Xavier. Ruth is married to her husband of 31 years, has a daughter who's a junior in college, and two dogs. She's passionate about golf, downhill skiing, loves to travel, even though she travels for work about 30 weeks out of the year and wonders how she lived without her Kindle. Carol Stack is a native of St. Paul, Minnesota, and is a former director of admissions in McAllister College and Augsburg College, and she's worked as a college counselor at both the International School of Brussels and St. John's International School in Waterloo, Belgium. For the past 15 years in her work through Harwick Day, she has consulted on financial aid policy at dozens of colleges, including Whittier, Grinnell, Oberlin, Reed College, and American University, among others. She and her husband just celebrated their 34th wedding anniversary, have two adult children, and also one wonderful dog, a passionate reader. She burns through books at least two a week. On a Kindle, no less, Carol?
On a Kindle.
There you go.
Right.
You and Ruth are wired for technology. Well, ladies, again, a very, very timely subject, not just for yours, truly, as I mentioned, but in general, the whole process, game, opportunities, I think a lot of people either throw up their hands and just feel they have to write a check, or they're stuck in such a place that young people think, I can't even go there. I've got to go do something different. So perhaps you could start out and tell us, you know, why did you write this book? Ruth, why about you first?
Well, for exactly those reasons and a few others that have to do with 35 years of frustration on watching really smart kids and concerned parents make really poor choices because they lacked information. So we had the information and decided to write a book and get it out in the market.
That's great. And, Carol, was this a matter of you realizing, my gosh, I feel like I'm a tape kind of rerunning, so now I'm going to look for a different medium of sharing the knowledge?
Well, yes, in many ways, or let me say a wider medium. I think over the last however many years, Ruth and I have both had dozens, hundreds of conversations with students and parents, helping them take control of the process. Because the language is kind of specific to financial aid and to college choice, and because there are a lot of acronyms involved, and people tend to feel a little powerless, and they don't have to. It's not rocket science. Ruth and I aren't rocket scientists, and we understand the process. And so we thought, there's room for a book that explains the process in plain old English, gives some really clear examples of that students and parents can relate to of good and bad decision-making when it comes to college choice and financing. And so we sat down and did it.
Mm-hmm. You know, Ruth, the book lays out nicely. It's always the kind of thing as the be myth busters. And why don't you hit a couple of the seven biggest myths that you kind of get people's awareness on the whole idea of paying for college?
But, you know, we had a lot of fun with this, and actually it was hard to get down to seven.
Mm-hmm.
We've had interviewers ask us why seven. Well, that seemed to be a manageable number. But let's start with myth number one, you get what you pay for. That's almost an old American adage, and people really believe it. So we wanted to explain to families the truth, the part of that that's true, and the part of that that is false. And there are a lot of issues embedded in this. For example, a cheaper college in the minds of some, or less expensive as we would say, wouldn't be as good as a school that costs more money. And of course that's not true. But the strategic part of doing a college search, in addition to finding a school that's right for you because it matches your interests and your academic ability, is to look for a school that will actually fund you to go there. Kind of the concept of graduate education. And so we talk about the fact that what you're going to pay for college can be very clearly and directly related to how you do your college search, that you start with figuring out what it is your family can afford to pay, and make that relative to the decisions you make in the process, and find the school who so values you as a student, they will give you money to come, in addition to the need-based financial aid that you will get from the federal government or the state government if you qualify.
That's right. That's right. But that's a pretty tricky thing, because there's so much, you know, the top 10 schools in this, or the U.S. News and World Report of that. And so I think some of us, like all the slick marketing that's done out there to influence what kind of blue jeans we buy, we can get influenced in ways that probably could take us from that authentic possibility. Don't you see it?
That's absolutely right. And in fact, an additional answer to your first question about why we wrote the book is the media spends a lot of time talking about those 10 or 15 schools at the top that have huge price tags. And, you know, there's a very small percentage of students who will actually enroll at those schools. And so we really brought the book down to the schools everybody should be looking at. And we didn't think those schools needed the help or the visibility, for example, for the books that are in our best bets section at the end.
So the one myth you went after, you get what you pay for. How about a couple others?
Another one we love, and it's out there. All the high school students talk about their REACH school. And the reason you call it a REACH school is it's a school that has an academic profile slightly above your own test score and class rank, so it's a reach to get in. And the myth, and there is a little bit of truth to this, is you should go to the best school you can get into, and so students will commonly have at least one reach school in their set of schools they're considering. And here is the bottom line, and our book really keeps bringing students back to the bottom line financially, and that if you can barely get in, that school is not going to fund you based on your academic ability or other personal characteristics or traits, very likely. So you're going to be paying pretty darn close to full price.
Right. Never mind that perhaps that REACH school goes back to that first premise of really needing to do the homework on, is this a right match for you? Whether it be the curriculum, the culture, the type of other students that kind of look, feel like you, is this going to be, quote, your tribe for the next 4 years or 4 years plus?
Exactly. Yep, and that's, you know, being satisfied with your college experience and, you know, enjoying it, but looking back over the years and thinking about the choices you made is something that, you know, we don't want students and families living with regret. Why? If we'd only known this, if we'd only known then, they'd have made a better choice. And so that's a really powerful reason to read this book and to spend some time thinking before starting a college search, what is it we can afford, what kind of school. We have an entire section of the book to help students map themselves out on paper. And it includes not just their academic abilities, but their interests and their talents. And then we tell kids, let's say you and your friends are all about being green. You started the sustainability club at school, and you're the president. Well, there are colleges and universities that so value sustainability,
right,
they might give you a scholarship on that premise.
But, you know, part of the daunting challenge, of course, is even if I could anchor all of that of who I am, what my passions are, what I've got on my resume or my application, but now, how do I go into this huge hopper of choice and, you know, your thoughts about, I mean, obviously the ways of talking to alumni, of what you read, but, you know, not all schools are necessarily marketing or making their information as available so that kind of those two neurons can connect.
Yeah, and you know what, the when thinking about yourself and your own needs, we encourage students to think about, are you comfortable enough to go a long ways away to school? Is that your preference? So as you build your parameters, you start to narrow the groups of schools in which you'll be interested. And as you further refine and define what it is you're looking for in a school, those lists will grow even shorter. And you know what? Just about every high school has at least one software package, a really strong search engine for students. They can go into their counselor's office, sit down, type in all these personal characteristics. And in our book, there's a way. The list is there. You just have to type in your answers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you go in and you type them into the search engine, and they'll start suggesting schools for you. So between your own personal preferences and the help you can get at school or with some of the software, you can build a good list to start of maybe 15 to 20 schools to start looking at. And Carol, I feel strongly, and Carol's on the line, she can speak for herself, but, you know, there are going to be schools out there you've never heard of. And one of those schools might be the perfect one for you. So don't worry about the fact you don't know the name of that school.
Right, right. Carol, the thought that, of course, both of you have sat in the chair of being the director of admissions, and so you've seen the plethora of applications throughout your years, and, of course, that has skyrocketed now with the advent of common applications and Internet posting and not necessarily some of the fees that restricted people in the past. So writing this book from the seats you two have enjoyed of being on the admission side, as well as, I suspect, navigating your own children's journeys, what might be some of the real ahas that you two have come to grapple with how this whole process has changed over the years?
Well, as you can imagine, Zara, the process has changed mechanically,
yeah,
remarkably, since I started in this business in 1974, when every application was paper and either handwritten or ink or done on an IBM Selectric. With the advent now of both the Common Application and the Universal Application, it's possible for students to essentially put all their information in once and send it out to as many as, I think the Common Application now has 456 member colleges,
yeah,
and universities. So the challenge now, when you're sitting in the director of admissions chair and you see year after year the number of your applications increase, is to try to determine how much of which of those are what I'm going to call hard or real,
yeah,
applications.
Right.
And that's where we actually advise students, whenever possible, for the schools in which they have a real interest and they see a real match, that's where they need to reach out and
exactly.
make a personal contact with the admission counselor who's assigned to them, or with the financial aid director, depending on where they are in the process, and say, hey, I'm for real. I'm Carol Stack, and I know that Carol Stack's Pretty Good College is the right place for me. I'm not just shopping around. I'm very interested in you, and I'd like to find out more about how we can make this investment in my education work.
Yep, well said. Let's get back to, of course, the real anchor for your group. It's all about financing, and it's the financial aid side of the story. You mentioned in your book, you're pretty strong, that students and families should really think of $32,000 to be a cap on what kind of debt they would assume over this period of time. What's magic about that number?
This is Carol, and I'll just dive in.
You bet. Please, Carol.
There are a couple ways in which that number is magic for us. The first is that if we went out and randomly gathered a bunch of personal financial planners together, their advice, I think, to most college students would be, when you graduate from college, your student loan debt should be at most with a 1-to-1 ratio with the salary you expect to earn that first year out of college. So for most of us, at least in my case and Ruth's case, who are liberal arts grads, I majored in English and history and she in education and psychology, right now we're looking at an average starting salary of somewhere between $31,000 and $35,000 a year, depending on which data that you look at. The second reason that we're pretty firm about that amount of student loan debt is staying a little below that cap of $32,000 means that a student can obtain all of his or her student loans in federally guaranteed loans.
Right, exactly.
Which is just the best kind of money to get. There's no other way around it. And then the third reason, we have a pretty long chapter for high school students to help them understand the implications of student loan debt after they've graduated.
Right.
And, you know, if you're graduating and walking out the door 6 months later with $700, $800, $900 a month in student loan payments, those loan payments are de facto making decisions about where you can live, what you can do, whether or not you can get married, whether or not you can take a post-grad internship to help build your career, all kinds of things. And, boy, that's no good. I mean, when you graduate from college, those choices, you need to have control of those choices for yourself, not be driven by the amount of student loan repayment check you have to write every
that's
month.
Right. You know, one thing I really give the two of you credit for with your book is that it's really written in a form to address this whole discourse to students. And why did you make that choice as opposed to, for many of the kids, the financiers or the parents?
Yeah, I'll jump in. This is Ruth. We had a lot of fun with the strategic approach that we took to writing the book. Number one, students are responsible for paying for their own college education. They're coming into adulthood, and they really need to accept the responsibility. Now, the reality of it is the majority of traditional-age college freshmen are still dependent on their parents, so you go through the need-based process together, counting everybody's income and assets and debts and opportunities to pay for college and, of course, to receive federal and state-based aid. And so we thought it very important that we talk to students in student language. We tried to make the book a little bit fun. We worked really hard to scrub away all of the lexicons and the jargon because it is, number one, it's intimidating. It makes you feel stupid if you don't know what you're reading. And there's no reason for that because these are smart kids ready to go to college, and we thought we'd hold their interest. So we also created just a little introduction for parents to explain it to them, to say, hey, this is in language you're more used to hearing from your kids when they come walking in the door after school. And then, Zara, we did try to scrub out the likes. You know, if you hear the word like, that like.
Right. Well, I think the other thing I was looking for, because I can tell you, and each of us has our own journey and come from different family work ethics and the like, but I'll never forget the conversation my father had with me and my three brothers, and that was, I want you kids to pay for as much of your college education yourself as you can. Knowing that, however, I'll do whatever I can so you can at least have space to enjoy extracurricular activities, because that, of course, is such an important part of the college experience. He felt that way. And, you know, the difference of having some skin in the game, you know, your own skin that contributed, even if it's a decision to take on a loan that you're going to live with the consequences of it afterwards, it makes you a lot more mindful of the choices you make, whether it be your spending money, the textbook. Well, you know, I think I'll go get the used one instead of buying new. Until you have the skin in the game, you don't know to appreciate that.
Sarah, this is Carol, you're absolutely right about that. One of the things that I think Ruth and I have both discovered over the years as we've worked with students and parents is that, frankly, many of them haven't had any conversations about how that college education is going to be financed and funded. And, you know, kids don't necessarily know how to say, how much are you going to give me? What can I count on? For parents, talking about money and your income and assets with your children is always kind of a loaded topic. And so two of the things we included in the book were two distinct chapters. One written for students, almost a script, how to sit down and talk with your parents about money for college, how to indicate that you are indeed willing to put skin in the game, to use your analogy. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things are you willing to take on, and how can you help this family commitment? For parents, we have a chapter that says, okay, you got to sit down and you have to talk turkey. You don't have to tell them everything about your finances, but one of the major assumptions or requirements, I would say, of the federal and state and college financial aid programs is that for dependent students, the first responsibility for paying for college lies with the student and his or her parents. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's plenty of advice out there for parents on how to talk to your children about sex or how to talk to them about drugs, alcohol, mm-hmm. tobacco. We saw a real gap in terms of how to talk to your children and for children, how to talk with your parents about financing a college education.
You bet. And again, take us through that whole conversation, perhaps, about how that's changed. I mean, do you find, again, the two of you have been admissions counselors, you've dealt with youth over the years, the shifts in generation, those of us baby boom parents who I guarantee I haven't had my kids off work in part-time jobs nearly like I did when I was a kid, and some of that is shame on me, but to make space for other things they've enjoyed learning. But how has that molded your own personal thinking over this period of time, both of you?
Well, this is Carol again. You know, we've certainly seen dramatic shifts that it's almost a confluence of factors. Mm-hmm. As we're well aware, the price of a college education right. has increased dramatically. Just in the last 11 years alone for private colleges, the slope of increase is something that I think is approaching about a 45-degree angle, depending on how you chart it out. It's kind of scary. When I went to college in 1970, it was possible for my parents to pay in full for a private college education in an amount that was under 10% of their income.
Right.
And, you know, they were nice, well-educated, working hard people. But boy, right now, for your average private college, if we use that same rule of thumb, we're talking incomes that have to be in excess of $350,000, $400,000 a year to stay at 10%. So on one side of the equation, that's changed. On the other side of the equation, as you noted, I think our expectations for our children have changed.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. Our children had part-time jobs in high school, but they didn't work nearly the hours that my husband and I did when we were high schoolers. On the other hand, they had a lot more opportunities available to them in terms of not just athletics, but studying two languages and volunteer work and all that kind of thing. So it becomes kind of a trade-off. But there are different kind of expectations. I think maybe that the one parental thing that has stayed the same, regardless of generation, is that for many of us, we just can't imagine a better way to spend our money than on our children's education.
You got it. It's the one gift we can give them that nobody can take away.
Absolutely.
You bet. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Carol and Ruth, the authors of the Financial Handbook, Getting the Education You Want at the Price You Can Afford. Let's close. If there was one single most important takeaway for students and parents from your book, what would that be? Ruth, you first.
I would say do not let the process take yeah. away opportunities.
Right.
Take charge of it, own it, gather information, and go about it systematically so that you make a great choice in the end.
You betcha, because the resources and access to information is all there. It's a matter of you knowing which door to open up. How about you then, Carol?
I think the one thing that I would say to them is, if possible, try and relax and have fun with it.
Yeah.
And enjoy what you learn about yourselves and enjoy the interactions that you have with your family as you go through this process.
Yes, because that's true. It isn't just an individual lone journey. It's really to do that as a collective family, which you've done so many other navigable things. Let's make sure this one happens the same way. So again, thanks so much to Carol Stack and Ruth Vedvik, the book, The Financial Handbook, Getting the Education You Want at the Price You Can Afford. Thanks again for joining us, ladies.
Oh, thank you, Zara.
You bet. We'll be in touch.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.